So welcome everyone to our Parshat Vayera 5775 class, Keeping Up Appearances, an exploration into the true nature of kindness. Why does God want me to perform good deeds? So at the outset, I want to preface my comments tonight by talking about the nature of a Parsha's name. Because we're going to see tonight that there's tremendous significance in what the Torah calls a specific Torah reading. It's not just that it happens to be a word that opens the section. It's much more profound. And I will illustrate this, I think, in a very interesting way. There are two sections of the Torah which ostensibly could both be called the same name, the same Parsha's name, Toldot. Now, one of them we had already, and that's the Parsha of Noah. Eile Toldot Noah. These are the generations of Noah. And then coming up in just a few short weeks, we have a Parsha that is actually called Toldot. It says, Eile Toldot Yitzchak. These are the generations or the progeny of Isaac. Now, it's interesting because Noah is called Noah, not Toldot, generations. But the Parsha Toldot could have been maybe called Isaac. Why is it called Toldot? So it's very clear that in the case of Noah, Noah is the centerpiece, not the generations of Noah, the progeny. Whereas in the Parsha named Toldot, Isaac is not the focus. The focus on who is going to be the chosen one. Is it going to be Jacob or Esau? So we see very clearly that the name of the Parsha is nuanced. Now, if this is true, why name a Parsha appearance? Because that's what the word Vayera means. And he, God, appeared to Abraham. Vayera Elav Hashem. So it opens the story, a very famous story, 3 days removed from his circumcision at age 99. It is an extraordinarily hot day. I mean, we're talking climate change 1,000 times beyond Vice President Gore's ever wildest dreams. Okay, and it was 185 degrees out there, and nobody was on the road. And Abraham is sitting there in his tent in tremendous pain because we are told that it's the third day after circumcision that is the most painful. Now, we're not aware of that because usually at 11 days old, the babies really aren't complaining too much, right? But when you're 99, yes, I think it could be. So Abraham is there, and it's the heat of the day, and God appears to him. Why? To visit the sick. So let's look at the very, very first opening verse, which gives the Parsha, our section this week, Vayera, its name. Vayera elav Hashem be'elone mamre, v'hu yoshev pesach ha'ohel kechomayom. And the Lord appeared to him, to Abraham, in the plains of Mamre, and he, Abraham, was sitting at the entrance of the tent when the day was hot. And then, as we just said, in source number 2 at the bottom of the page, and the Lord appeared to him to visit the sick, to be mevaker cholim, which is, interestingly, the source in the Shulchan Aruch, in the code of Jewish law, for the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So any of you who have ever had the opportunity to visit someone who wasn't well, the source for this mitzvah is brought down as this moment right now that God comes to Abraham 3 days removed from his circumcision to be Mevaker Cholim. Please turn the page to the back of the page. And then it goes on to say in source 3 that he was at the entrance of the tent. Why was Abraham anxiously waiting there by the Petach, the entranceway of Abraham and Sarah's famous Holiday Inn in Beersheba, by the plains of Mamre, to see whether there were any passerbyers whom he would bring into his home? So he's anxious that even though he's in pain, he's distressed more, not by the pain, but by the pain of not being able to host a guest. When the day was hot, why was the day so hot? Well, it wasn't global warming or climate change. The Holy One, blessed be He, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, took the sun out of its sheath so as not to trouble Abraham with wayfarers, because he knew the heart of Abraham. But since he saw that Abraham was troubled, he was mitzta'er, he was bothered that no wayfarers were coming, he brought the angels to him in the likeness of men. Let's stop for a moment. Now, this story is a famous, famous story. Now, interestingly, we know that what is the defining characteristic of Abraham? Chesed. Each of the patriarchs has one defining midah, attribute. We say by Abraham, it's chesed, kindness. Isaac is gevura, or din, strength, justice. And Jacob is emes, emet, truth. These are the defining characteristics of our patriarchs. Now, where in the Torah do you see in the written law that Abraham and Sarah were wonderful purveyors of chesed, of kindness? Well, you hear a lot of stories in Midrashic, oral tradition lore, but what about in Mikra itself, in the actual written Torah? This is it. This is it. This is the dugma, the ultimate example of Abraham and Sarah's amazing ability to host people. Now, I want to ask a question. Let's examine the story for a moment, and we'll see that maybe the story is a little strange. We'll ask the question, we'll see something interesting thematically, and then we'll come back to our original topic about whether God wants me to perform kindness, and if so, what does it really mean? Okay? May not be quite what we think. Let's look at the story. Okay. God comes to Abraham, 3 days removed from his circumcision, to visit him. Now, we all know the story that one of the three magical visitors is an angel. They're all angels. One of them is named, you may have heard of him, Raphael. Raphael. Refuah. Mr. Healing. And what's the purpose of the angel? To make Abraham feel better. It's very strange, don't you find, that God is making a big point to come to Abraham, to visit him, to heal him, when, oh, I don't know, 5 minutes later, boom, the angel's going to come, zap Abraham, and everything will be okay. Why doesn't he just zap him and heal him? Seems a little strange. Okay, but that's not the craziest part of the story. Let's examine what happens. Now, God is sensitive to Abraham, and he understands, oh my gosh, Abraham loves to host people. It's his defining characteristic, chesed, kindness. So I know Abraham, and I know God is saying that if it's a normal day, even though he's in tremendous pain, he's on the DL, he's on the disabled list, nevertheless, he's going to find a way to bring someone in so he and Sarah can host them. So I'll spare him. I'm making 180 degrees. Nobody will be on the roads. Nobody. Okay. And then God says, oh my gosh, I was wrong. Now that in and of itself is a little bit of a problem. I mean, he's God, right? But okay, let's just suspend our disbelief. Pretend God, for whatever reason, you know, just wasn't that. That was just part of the equation. It's strange, right? All right. 180 degrees. So there's no one on the road. Now, what I ask you, what is the simplest solution to this problem?
Cool it off.
Thank you. You put on the AC. So it's 180 degrees. God should just turn the thermostat down to a normal 102 or whatever it was at this time in the desert. And then you would have, within a very short order, human beings coming around, right? No, no, he doesn't do that. He leaves the thermostat at 180. And then, instead of human beings, because no one could tolerate the heat, he has to bring in fake human beings in the guise of human beings, malachim, angels. Now, that's a very strange story so far, no? I mean, when you analyze it, it doesn't seem very reasonable. It gets worse. Because how does Abraham, how does he react to these three men? He doesn't understand who they are. You know, they're not walking with their little Pennsylvania driver's license. Hi, I'm Gabriel, and I'm on my way to Sodom and Gomorrah, but I'm coming for a pit stop at your house, right? So Gabriel, Raphael, and Michael, the three angels, are coming. He doesn't know who they are, so he brings them in, and he goes crazy to serve them. Now, you know the famous story, right? What does he do? He goes to Sarah. He says, oh my gosh, Sarah, you won't believe it. There are three crazy people out there. It's 182 degrees, but they're there. Let's bring out the smorgasbord, right? And he runs to the cattle, and he gets three cows, because he has to give each of them a tongue with mustard. He gets the Coleman's British mustard, you know, and he's serving them the best food. Now, here's where it gets ridiculous, because Rashi says that they're eating, but they didn't really eat. It just appeared that they were eating. Now, there are opinions that say, no, in honor of Abraham and Sarah, For the only time in the history of angelic lore, angels ate. But that's not what Rashi, Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchak, he doesn't say. He says, it just looks like it, I'll use the word again, it appears as if they're eating. They're like little children, you know? You give them the, I don't know, fried liver and onions, and you're about 8 years old, and mom says, no, you're going to finish, right? And you have a little dog. Anybody have a dog in the house, right? All of a sudden, the dog is a beneficiary of a lot of liver that comes under the table. So, it's a little silly, because the angels are only appearing to Abraham and Sarah like they're eating. So here he's cooking up the delicacy beyond delicacy, and then they're just kind of stuffing the food in their pocket when he's looking away. So they're not even eating. So after, one of the angels says, oh, excuse me, Avraham, where's Sarah, your wife? Oh, she's, you know, in the tent. Okay, now I'm going to tell you who we really are. And they take out their driver's license, they identify themselves. I'm Michael, I'm coming to announce Isaac. I'm Raphael, boom, you feel better? Abraham, you're ready for Sunday's football game? You're back, right? And then, of course, we have Gabriel. He's, my mission is to go to Sodom and Gomorrah, but that's another story, Abraham, that's coming up. All right, at that point, they leave. Now, what must Abraham and Sarah have thought? Just think about this for a moment. He was really hurting, wasn't he? And he's running. It says rats. He was running to the cows and the cattle. And Sarah's, you know, they're baking and they're cooking and the whole wonderful gourmet dinner. And they must have sat back afterwards and looked at each other with, like, just stupefied a reaction. What? How would you react? You'd say, oh, my gosh, it cost me an arm and a leg. I cooked, I baked, but they weren't even people. What? Why did God make me go through this? Now, remember, this is not a small issue. This is the only time in the entirety of the Torah that we are given a glimpse in real narrative in the Torah, in the written law, right? Not somewhere from the Midrash. Right here, of the greatness of Abraham and Sarah. But if you were analyzing, you say, well, wait a minute, I don't understand. They didn't really do anything. Because the people who they thought were people weren't people. They were just in the guise of people. Did they eat? No. So where was the hachnasas orchim? Where was the kindness? Where was the hospitality? They gave hospitality to people who are not people, who didn't even eat and didn't even benefit from what they gave them. And this should be the makor, the source for Sarah and Abraham's overwhelming kindness? What? Right? I mean, just imagine the conversation between Abraham and Sarah after the fact when all was revealed to them. So what I'd like to share with you now is that this word appearance, to see, is not just the name of the Parsha, but it seems to be the most powerful element that defines each and every major component in the Parsha. Let us begin.
Before you go, can I ask you a couple questions, please? You said Abraham went and brought back three calves. Your literature says one calf.
I understand. I understand. But this is in the oral tradition that he actually went. It says El Habakar. He ran to the cattle, plural. So the tradition is that he took three tongues from three animals. It's oral tradition.
Sick guys carrying three.
Well, he shechted them and took their tongues.
Okay.
You know, it was a delicacy.
The other side of the coin.
Pickled tongue.
A tongue is very large. You could feed three people.
Okay. One. I gather that they had to get the best of the best. He had very special cows waiting for this one moment for prestigious visitors. That's what it says. Yes, next. I know what they're talking.
He ran, took a calf, tender and good, and he gave it to the youth. Who's the youth?
Anyone?
Well, the answer.
Yishma.
Oh, we have a machlokas. You have Yishmael and you have Eliezer.
Yishmael was a baby at the time.
Well, Yishmael also was
a little kid.
Right. So I.
Oh, that's true.
Right.
He was 13.
Okay.
But he wasn't.
Probably refers to Eliezer, but it could be. You could make arguments probably both ways.
Because many times they refer to Eliezer, they even ask.
Correct. God says, correct.
Your progeny, he says Eliezer. He didn't say Ishmael.
Correct. So if you look at number 5, you can, as you read through it, I hope you read through it as I described, right? We already discussed this. I'm not going to go through number five. This is the actual narrative of Abraham going to, let's say, the limit to make sure that the angels we thought were men had what they needed, right? All right. Let's now look at the rest of the parsha, and you will see that the word to see, to look, to appear, appears everywhere, in every circumstance. Let's look at number six. And the two angels came to Sodom. So this is after Abraham has the famous bargaining session, right, where he haggles with God, comes from 50 to 45 to 40, 30, 20 to 10, and he says, 10, if I could find 10 righteous men and women in all of Sodom, would you at least spare one city? Now, what's remarkable is who was the only interest? He's only interested in one person. But he didn't ask, did he? It's very interesting. He never says, could you save just my nephew, please? He doesn't say that, right? He sort of like hides among the 10 would be Lot and the other 9. All right. After the two angels go towards Sodom and Gomorrah, one goes back home to Shemayim, to heaven. His mission is done. So the two angels come and they arrive in the evening, and Lot was sitting at the gate of Sodom. He was the judge of the city. Now Lot saw and stood up to meet them, and he bowed face to the ground. Now, he knew they were angels right away. Abraham did not. Of course, there's a famous rabbis say that what was the difference? Because with Abraham, they were anashim. They were people, because Abraham was on the level of an angel. To him, they were like fellows. Lot was way below that level, so to him, they were in the guise of angels. Now, he saw them, and what does he go to do? He acts exactly like Abraham and Sarah. What does he do? He brings them in, announces, unfortunately, his wife does at least, to the world that we have guests. And that was probably not a good idea in the city of Sodom, right? Because in Sodom, it was a capital offense to do Hachnas Sarkim, which is interesting. But you see very clearly that Lot sees and gets to meet them. So this introduces us to the entire story. Plus, I didn't have this here, but just something curious. When the men surround the house and say, Lot, where are those two men? We want to know them. And I'm not going to go there, but it's not a nice thing what they want to do to the two men. We want to know these two men. Bring them out. Right? And he says, no. And he slams the door behind him. He says, brothers, what are you doing? I'll give you my two virginal daughters. You know, nice guy, right? Nice father. He says, but don't touch the guests. What happens when they're about to lynch Lot? They're struck with blindness, right? The absence of sight. So they can't see the door. Interesting, right? It's another, just a little snippet of idea of sight, right? Key component of the story. Then it gets better. Because look at number seven. Famously, and this is from the Morton's people, right, who brought you salt. And Lot's wife, Batabet, she looks behind. She becomes a pillar of salt. Boom. Because she looks back at the destruction of Sodom. So again, she gazes at the destruction, eyesight, appearance, boom, she's dead. All right, next, it gets better. And Abimelech says to Abraham, now, what happened? This is the Rosh Hashanah drasha, but I'll repeat it very, very succinctly. It'll take 5 seconds. Ready? Okay. Abimelech loves Sarah because she's beautiful, steals her to be his wife because he hears that they're just brother and sister, Abraham and Sarah. Right? Afterwards, God comes to Abimelech and says, you're a dead man. Return the married woman. Oh my gosh, Abimelech gets the next morning and he says to Abraham, you lied to me. You told me you were brother and sister, remember? And what does he say? Maraita. Abimelech said to Abraham, number 8, Maraita, what did you see? Abraham, what did you see here that you did this thing? Now there's an extra reference, because what does Abraham respond? He gives a politician's answer, right? He says, well, first of all, I saw that Ein Yirat Elokim b'makom hazeh. There's no people who fear God. Have you noticed the word yira, to fear, and the word ro'eh, to see, are the same word, correct? There's no one who fears God. Plus, really, we're kind of like brother and sister, even though I married her, because she's my niece, and it's okay. But where we come from, right? All right. So once again, Abimelech says, what did you see? What appeared to you? Why would you fabricate the story? And this was the little drasha where I quoted Simon and Garfunkel. Do you remember? Anyone remember this? I'm not testing you here. Man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. That was the drasha. Okay? Next. Sarah is very unhappy with Hagar, the Egyptian. Now, why? Because as soon as Hagar gets pregnant with Yishmael, her whole attitude changes. Oh my gosh, I'm pregnant, and Sarah, my mistress, she's not. And oh my gosh, look how old she is, and she's davening all her life, and I get pregnant like this, must be. But tekel givirte b'enaha, right? She starts to become light in her eyes. She starts walking around all haughty and hot stuff, Hagar does, and Sarah is really bent out of shape, so she goes to Abraham and says, Abraham, this is really bad. I mean, Hagar is showing no respect to me at all. I feel like Rodney Dangerfield. I mean, this is really, really bad. Now, there's a very beautiful idea here that, God forbid, Sarah would be cruel, because it says, but ta'anel Sarah, right? She afflicts her. So Rabbi Aryeh Levin says something very beautiful, but I'll share with you. Just don't think, God forbid, Sarah was like cruel and unusual. Because she goes to Abraham. Abraham says, Sarah, look, you take care of the situation. So it says she afflicted her. Well, what did she do? Nothing more than she did before. Ah, what changed? So Rabbi Levin says, gorgeous. Nothing changed. It's just that now that she was hot stuff, the fact that Sarah treated her exactly as she had been treated prior to her pregnancy, but she was no longer in her own mind a shifta anymore. She wasn't a handmaiden. She's hot stuff now. She's like a wife. How dare you treat me? It's an indignity, right? So in other words, nothing changed in the treatment of Sarah towards Hagar. But the perception in Hagar's mind was that now I'm so wonderful. How dare you treat me the way you used to treat me? So that's a nice little defense of Sarah, which I always enjoy, because I hate when people, you know, blaspheme and malign the Avot Imahot, our mothers or our patriarchs. Okay, so what did Sarah see? She saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had born to Abraham, making merry. He was mitzachek. And he wasn't a nice kid. What was Ishmael doing? Anyone know the story? It's very famous. He had a little bow and arrow contest. You know, and Isaac would be over there, and Isaac was the little precious son. He'd say, oh, Isaac, could you hold up that bullseye over there? And he'd take his arrow and whoosh, right over the head of Isaac. Right? Oh, I'm just playing a game, Sarah. Come on, don't get all bent out of shape. She says, oh my gosh, this is really bad. So that's at that point, of course, she goes and says, look, you know, this is just not working. You got to get rid of the kid. Ishmael's not going to be with my son Isaac. It's just not going to work. Okay? Now, what happens? Number 10. So Hagar and Ishmael are banished. They go out into the desert, and the kid is dying of thirst. Hagar says, look, it's all over. But God opened Hagar's eyes, and of course she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the pouch with water and gave Ishmael the lad to drink. Again, everything, you see, it's all about appearance. Boom, a pure water. Everything is seen over and over. Now we come to the best. Abraham is given the test. What's the test? The Akedah, the binding of Isaac. And he's told what? Take your son that you love and bring him up there as an offering. So what happens? Look at number 11, please. On the third day, after their journey, it took a long time. Now, why did it take 3 days? Because God wanted Abraham to have lots and lots of quiet time to think about what he's doing. It's very easy, if you think about it, in a moment of like martyrdom or something, you just jump into the fire because you're an idiot. You're not thinking about the consequences, right? You have a moment of inspiration and you just jump. Like that crazy guy who walked across the two towers in Chicago, or whatever. But I guess he thought about it a little bit, you know. But what happens? 3 days, long journey to get to the Har HaBayit, the future home in Jerusalem. Now, in those 3 days, a long time for Abraham to question himself, God, and everything else in between. So it's deliberately done so that nobody could say after the fact, oh, well, that Abraham, he thinks he's such hot stuff, he was willing to sacrifice Isaac. If you had only given him time to mull over his decision would have been different. No, we're giving him 3 days. So it was on the third day, number 11, Abraham, not only did he see, it was beyond seeing. It says, Vayisas enav, he lifted up his eyes, Vayar et hamakom merachok, and he saw the place, the makom hamikdash, the future place of the Temple Mount, where they are like rioting as we speak, basically, unfortunately, tragically, okay, that's the place. Okay, and he saw the place from afar. Okay, now, what does it mean he lifted up his eyes to see? So it's sort of like perspicacity, you know the word perspicacious, to see, like it's like if I give you a book, you know, where's Waldo, find 12 Waldos in 1 minute, you got $1 million, you would be lifting up your eyes to see. It means engaging fully all your faculties, mental, physical, in order to find Waldo. That's what Abraham was doing. He's looking beyond looking. And he sees the place. Now, of course, it's ironic because the place actually becomes the place of seeing. Because what is the place called? You'll see. And Abraham said, after Isaac asks him, Dad, I don't understand. I see like the fire and I see the knife and I see the wood. I don't see the sacrifice, Dad. Now remember, how old is Isaac? He's not a little child. He's 37 years old, right? And all the little pictures and paintings, you have an insane maniac, Abraham, bringing a little 8-year-old. No, he's 37 years old. In fact, why does he get tied up? Does anyone know? It was Isaac who wanted to be tied up because Isaac says, when I see the knife, I'll probably overpower you, Dad, and I have a little more strength at this time in my life. I mean, you're 137 and I'm only 37. I think I will win out when I see my life is about to be extinguished. I will fight you, so tie me up, right? So the akedah, the idea of the tying and binding, is really for the protection of the mission. All right. So what does Abraham respond in to the query of Isaac? Where's the ram? Where's the sacrifice? He says, God will seek out, yireh. He will expose for himself the lamb for the burnt offering. Could be you. We don't know. But there's that word yireh. He will show you, appear, my son. And they both went together, yachtav, meaning Isaac was right on the same page as Abraham. Number 13. And then the angel of God comes and says, Abraham, do not touch Isaac. And he looks behind him, v'ayel achar nechaz b'sfach, and we have the shofar, future shofar, right? Caught in the bushes, the rams there that had been prepared for this moment. Abraham lifted up his eyes and he saw, again, when you lift up your eyes to see, it's like fully engaged. And lo, there was a ram. And that after it was caught in the tree by its horns, Abraham went, took the ram, offered up as a burnt offering instead of his son. And of course, all the scene, what do you name the place? What is Jerusalem or that area called now? So let's have a look at number 14. And Abraham named that place, the Lord will see. As it is said to this day on the mountain, we're talking about Jerusalem now, the Lord will be seen. I mean, this is absolutely crazy, right? Every moment. Vayera opened with the word, and he appeared. He was seen. From beginning to end, is everyone buying into this? The idea of re'iyah, to see, to appear, it's everywhere. It's almost to the ridiculousness, right? I mean, it's that sense of way out there. So the question is, why? What's the parsha trying to teach us? So let's get back to our original question. Our original question was as follows. Why, if this is the source in written literature of the Torah for Abraham and Sarah's greatness, why is it a big fake out? But it's worse than that. Because we said that even the opening gambit where God comes to visit Abraham's kind of a little bit of a fake out. It's like, Abraham, I'm going to heal you, but there's a doctor coming around the corner named Raphael. When he zaps you, you'll be gone. So how sick is he really? He's going to be healed in a moment or two. So this should be the source of why we visit people who are ill? It's very strange. Right? I mean, halavai, if only. Right? You go to visit someone in the hospital, and then Dr. Raphael, I don't know if you know a Dr. Raphael, we should, right? He's coming right around the corner with a stethoscope, and kaboom, you're healed, right? If that were true, right? I guess the doctors wouldn't have a parnassa, right? You wouldn't have such a living. But it would be amazing. What a world. So it's a fake out. And then it's a fake out with Abraham and Sarah putting all this energy and money to feed people who are basically shoving the food into their pockets? But everything's a fake-out, right? Because from beginning to end, even the most egregious fake-out is God's fake-out of Abraham. Because what does Abraham say? Okay, God, you wanted me to bring him up here. God says, yes, now bring him down. So Abraham's like, what you mean you didn't intend for me to hurt Isaac? Of course not. So it was all a fake-out. And who told him that it was going to be a fake-out? Himself, or the Yetzer Hara, right? The evil inclination comes to Abraham on the way and says, Abraham, well, why are you getting all bent out of shape? You think God's a maniac? You think he's going to let you sacrifice Isaac? He's dedicated your whole life, and you've dedicated your life with him, to fighting human sacrifice. And now God's going to ask for a human sacrifice? You think God's insane? He's a maniac? Trust me, Abraham, go home. In the end, It's not going to be Isaac. It's going to be a ram. So why are you getting all worked up? Now, why didn't Abraham listen to him? So that was another issue that we spoke about. But you see, from beginning to end, everything appears to be a serious situation, but in the end, kind of, is not really what we think it is, right? Now, it makes sense if the parsha is called Keeping Up Appearances, Vayera. It's all about how it appears. What message is God trying to give to Abraham and Sarah? So let me offer you something from my Rosh Hashiva, my Rebbe, Rabbi Weinberg.
This is the main point between the Israelis, Jews, and the Muslims. The Muslims say it wasn't Isaac that Abraham took. It was
Ishmael. Correct. Well, there is actually a chazal. The rabbis do say that Ishmael was really, really dying to be the one. Because if you think about Islam is all about what? Subjugating yourself to the will of God. So for him to give himself over, to martyr himself, is right up their alley. I hate to use the word dying, but he was dying to be the one. That it should be him and not Isaac. In fact, you know who the impetus for the whole thing was? Was a conversation between Isaac and Ishmael. How do we know this? Because it says, I'm just answering your question, it says, Vayi achar ha-devarim ha-ela. It was after these things, Vahashem nisa et Avraham. God tested Abraham. The only problem is the Torah doesn't say what those things were. But the Midrash, the oral tradition says there was a discussion between Ishmael and Isaac. And Ishmael saying, you know, you're such hot stuff, Isaac. I had a Brit Milah. I had a circumcision when I was 13 years old. I did it willingly, painfully. I knew what I was doing. You're a little eight-day-old baby. You're a little eight-day-old baby when you had your circumcision. That's a big deal. So Isaac said, you know, you're right. But if God would ask for my life tomorrow, I would willingly give it up. God asked for his life the next day. And in fact, from the Abraham side, the same thing. Abraham felt badly that in his life, he had never brought a korban, a sacrifice. He thought, maybe I made a mistake. God said, no. If I would ask for your son as a sacrifice, Abraham, you would bring it. So it's like almost like self-doubt within Abraham. So the idea of the test was not for God's sake. It was for the world, but more importantly, it was for Abraham himself to understand what he was capable of. So let's get back to our question. Why does the Parsha seem to be a little bit of a fake-out? So Abraham and Sarah are sitting around the table, and they're questioning themselves. Why do we go to such extreme when we're feeding fake people? And in answer, remember the original question, why couldn't God do the obvious in the story, turn the thermostat down, put up the AC, and real people come out? There's only one possibility. That the whole purpose of this story is to show us the nature of kindness, which is my question. Why does God want me to perform good deeds? Is it for God or is it for you? Well, think about it for a moment. Most people who are very altruistic, I do it for God, right? Give me that some old-time religion, right? But that's not what's going on here, clearly. Am I right? Clearly, Hashem's saying, look, if this is the only source in all of liturgy for Abraham and Sarah's magnificent behavior, and yet it really wasn't what we thought it was, there's only one possible conclusion. Abraham and Sarah, the fact that you thought that they were three people and that you acted this way, this is what I want. I want you to grow up to be a sensitive, caring human being who looks around this world, who sees a need, a perception, an appearance of a need, steps into the void and fills the need. Now, whether that need is real or not, that's not the issue.
But that can be dangerous, though, because you start finding needs that don't exist.
But, Doc, here's what it's saying. That in the case of Abraham and Sarah, it wasn't important. The true test of what they did is not whether they're eating the food or not. It's from the point of view of Abraham and Sarah.
Yeah, I'm not questioning what they did or why they did.
But listen, could God not have created a world where there was no need? This is the end of the story. Listen, it's amazing. If God wanted to, they don't have to be poor people at all. Poor people exist
so
that we can recognize that they need help and we can step in and help them. God could have created a world with no need at all. That's what the message was to Abraham and Sarah, and that's the message of the Parsha. It's appearance. It's that you see it, and you step into the void. God created this for us. It's not for him. And we see this magnificently in the story of Ruth, where there's a famous chazal, the rabbis say, that when a person does something for a poor person, it says, Yaiser, mimasha ba'abayis oisila ani. More than what the homeowner does for the poor person, he'ani oisila ba'abayis. The poor person gives back 1,000 times more to the one who gave them the charity or hosted them or gave them food. Now, how is that possible? Well, think about it. What did it cost me to give someone a meal or a bed for the night? Nothing. Nothing real. But what do I get in return? Eternity. So I get eternity because they gave me the opportunity to do this. So when we have an opportunity to visit a sick person, that's the whole point. It doesn't matter that the person's going to get healed. That's not the point. The point is that I am sensitive to the other person. I see a need. This person is in the hospital. They're alone. I want to be with them. That is the mitzvah. That I should see this. That it appears to me that's real or not. So people always get bent out of shape. You know, how do I know that that person is a real poor person? Right? How do I know that person is not taking all the money and they're pretending to be poor? You know, you go to Israel, everything you see is tzedakah, charity. So you hear people sometimes say, they become cynical. Well, how do I know that that guy's not eating at the kosher McDonald's after the fact, you know, and that he's really not poor at all, and he's rich, you know, he's rich, and he's driving a Mercedes somewhere in the, you know, parts of Israel unknown. What does it matter? What does that matter? You saw a need. It appeared to you as real. That's all that matters. So you have a parsha from beginning to end where every single endeavor God is saying to us, this is for you. It's not for me. You need to host the three men, the angels, because you're Abraham and Sarah. So in other words, if this is the model of Abraham and Sarah, and if Abraham is the paradigm of chesed, then this must be the whole reason, the raison d'etre, for why chesed begins at all. Why it even exists. Because otherwise, why would there be a part of creation that was open to us? That's the point. That God left part of creation for us to be partners with God. To create with God. I'll take questions just one more moment. Just wrap up and then we'll be off the official recorder. So we should all be zocha. We should all merit to continue to see, to look where appearances matter. And we should have many opportunities for each other, always, to step into the void, to step into a vacuum where there is a void, to have this amazing opportunity. What a gift it is. It's almost like you should thank the person that you're going to do this deed for. Thank you for allowing me the honor, the schus, the merit to be here with you. Because it really is an honor. It really is. And if we would see it with that type of vision, that it's a gift from God, that every opportunity we have to step into the void and act a little bit like our Creator, to emulate Hashem's own actions, it's a magnificent gift. So we should continue to merit having many gifts and having many opportunities in our own lives to make a difference. Shabbat Shalom.